Blog Talk Radio.
A Monday warrior, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride.
Afternoon on the East Coast, good morning on the West Coast, and a great day to you whenever, and oh, by the way, whenever you are listening, this is the Power Performance, a special Tuesday edition of the Power Performance. Today we are talking about the power of practice, debuting our new video on my Eloquent Online YouTube channel, Summer Band. Guys, check out this video, hundreds of moving parts, occasional changes in leadership. Just amazing, amazing video of young people being passionate about the results. And so we're going to talk about that today. Are you passionate about the results? Do you hold people in training to a high standard? And the only way we can talk about this effectively is go to the super mother of four. She's a cool Christian mom, Deb Schaefer, just at Deb Schaefer. Hey, Deb, how are you?
Hey, Jason, I'm great, thanks. How about you?
I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to the show. Another great week of archive listens. If you're not listening now, you can listen later. And Deb and myself are all thinking about our good buddy, Troy Hall, who is celebrating 35 years with the same woman, a love story. He's flying over to England and the ultimate date night / week. And Deb, we miss him, don't we?
We do miss him, and we wish him well, and yeah. That absolutely deserves an applause.
It does. I've known Troy since 2006. You hear him on the show. You meet him at conference events or whatever. He is a nice guy. And in a world where we often have a shortage of nice guys, Deb, as you know, it's nice to know we can count on Troy. So we're missing him.
It is nice. Yep, we do miss him. There's a void today, but we'll do our best to fill it.
we're going to roll with the duet today. And since we're joined by Deb Schaefer, just Deb at Deb Schaefer, you always bring us the latest and greatest from the world of consumerism, from mom, from moving kids into college, from managing three different generations in your family. And every time you're on the air with us, we go straight on with Deb.
Let's do it.
Sure. All right, Deb, what do you got for us?
Well, there were a lot of things I could have talked about today and had planned actually to talk about some of those. My life has changed drastically in the last week, but something happened on Saturday that drastically changed the lives of America. We lost a legend, an icon. Sadly, Neil Armstrong passed away at the age of 82 on Saturday. He was an American astronaut, first person to walk on the moon, aerospace engineer, U.S. Navy pilot, test pilot, university professor, and happened to be a fellow Ohioan from Cincinnati.
Yes, he was.
So when thinking about today's theme, which is the power of practice, I immediately thought of Neil Armstrong and our space program. Neil Armstrong obviously would not have been able to walk on the moon, to have landed on the moon, had it not been for lots and lots of practice. So I read some articles, obviously, over the last 2 days about Neil Armstrong and realized that while practicing for the landing in the lunar landing research vehicle, Neil Armstrong nearly died in one of those attempts. He could not control the vehicle and had to eject, and luckily walked away from that ejection, but the vehicle was destroyed to the tune of, I think at that time it was $500,000, which then was a lot. So, you know, 43 years ago, Neil Armstrong was practicing like no one had ever practiced. And
well, he was practicing for life and death. I mean,
yeah, when absolutely.
When we talked about this in the pre-show, I said to you, I honestly don't remember that moment. That was 1969. Mm-hmm. I was less than 3 years old. My parents probably had a black and white TV in Laredo, Texas, but I was probably asleep. But when I heard this news, it had that unique ring to it.
Yeah.
Again, it wasn't CNN, it wasn't Fox News, it wasn't local news, it wasn't a newspaper. I was just randomly checking my Facebook mm-hmm. page. And my brother was like, you know, RIP, Neil Armstrong, he had a picture of the lunar landing and all this stuff. And I was like, golly, I thought he was like in his 60s, and you just said mm-hmm. he was 82?
82, yeah. Yeah, I found out about it on Twitter. And so I think the fact that you found out on Facebook and I found out on Twitter says a lot.
It says a lot.
For our generations, you know, not only are our kids turning to social media for their news, we are too. And
Deb, you have four kids. You have four
mm-hmm.
kids. For those of you joining us for the first time, Deb Schaefer is the supermom of four kids in two different generations in the great state of Ohio, managing life and school and work and all those things. I want to ask you, your generational experience with your kids ranges from basically Gen Y down to the millennials. How many of your kids knew who Neil Armstrong was on Saturday?
I think my two older kids did, for sure. I mean, the name rang a bell, I'll put it that way.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Tell
yeah.
me a whole lot about, you know, that all-important space mission, you know, that you and I knew so much
of
about.
Course.
But no, my two younger boys, I had to tell them about this man and about the space program and what it used to be and sadly what it's not today.
Well, I think the space program, like everything else in America that is dependent upon taxpayer funding, gets put in that political realm.
Mm-hmm.
We've
mm-hmm.
got the thing, you know, we've got the GNC going on in Tampa. It's heating up election time.
Yeah.
I think what you're looking at right now, you know, Florida. I mean, how many times is Neil Armstrong in Florida? Florida's sort of the home of I love Texas. People
mm-hmm.
in Texas love to think that we are the best and the biggest and the first at everything. And most of the time we are. But the space program really has its roots in Cape Canaveral, Florida.
Right.
And you've got the Republicans out there. I've been thinking about Florida all week and about the show we did 2 weeks ago with Mandy Zerbrick about
mm-hmm.
rebranding. And one of the greatest themes that I took away from that interview was the concept of preparing. They practiced and practiced and practiced and prepared for that rebranding experience. And I think 2 weeks later, you can agree, it went pretty well.
Yeah.
And
right.
I think, and I mean, if you're doing a practice for a rebranding in Tampa, Florida on the ground, how much practice has to go into a moment where you're flying from the very earth that we live on now to our friendly satellite, the moon,
mm-hmm.
in an age where most Americans can't even spell computer.
Right.
I thought you would talk about this. My son is 11. He had absolutely no idea who Neil Armstrong was.
Yeah, it's sad. What are they learning in school?
he learns a lot, but I mean, the history that we teach our young people is always based upon our collective memory.
Sure.
And anyway, he's actually going out to the NASA camp this weekend with the Boy Scouts out in Houston, Texas.
Oh, cool.
And I thought, what a great time to do this. But I had the same reaction you did.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, man, this is a big deal.
Yeah.
And the news coverage, the media was just sort of like, you know, very, very grocery store. Not all that. Yeah, and I think that's what happens. With time and tenure, you lose the meaning of
mm-hmm.
things, and that's what we're talking about today.
Right. Well, a big shout-out to Neil Armstrong, and his contribution to history and our space program. So we'll do it for him.
It is history. You know, like you, growing up as a child of the 60s, 70s, and 80s, I was fascinated by space. How do you, you know, I had flown on the occasional jet aircraft, you know, going on family vacations and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, how do you go from the United States of America out of the atmosphere to the moon and not die every time you try it?
Right.
I mean, I was like, what? This is crazy. My father worked and was in the Air Force for years. NASA really is a common brand with the Air Force. I was fascinated by aviation from a very early age. And when I saw that post from my brother on Facebook, I was like, man, it really puts in perspective how much things are changing, how fast history goes by. And when we trust our instincts, hey, people know who we are. We have to really ask ourselves, do they really? Do they know who we are? Have they heard it from their parents? And mm-hmm. my son had never heard about Neil Armstrong from me, and I thought it was very interesting.
Well, and just to – it goes to show you that how true that statement is that you just shared with us, you know, how time flies and, you know, we do lose track of time. I still had Neil Armstrong pictured in my mind as, you know, this youthful –
the guy
in
the picture.
The guy in the picture in the
yes,
space
the
suit.
Guy in the, yes, in the space suit with his helmet in his hand. I know.
Yes.
I was the same way. Well, listen, that is what we're talking about today. Neil Armstrong never could have made it from Cape Canaveral, Florida to the moon the first time he tried it.
No.
Training is one of the most underrated aspects of our business. We invest tons of money in marketing and IT, mm-hmm. and I think that's great. But I honestly believe the best organizations, the best brands train all the time. Next week, we're going to do our first show on the best of the decade. We're going to say what was the best XYZ brand of the 2000s. It could be the airline industry, the auto industry, the best television show, the best movie. We're going to have a lot of fun with this. And if I was going to say my favorite brand of the decade in terms of brands that probably would not have made it without a great web presence and social media presence, I'd pick Southwest Airlines.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they succeeded after the 9/11 recession. They're in an industry that is constantly under scrutiny for bag fees, change fees, and whatever. And I can't wait to talk about this. But for today's show, the power of practice. I don't remember that moment. I'm 45 years old this year. So when that happened, when Neil Armstrong landed on the moon, one small step for man, a huge step for mankind, I was probably less than 3 or 4 years old, so I don't remember it. But I think today's generation, if they could hear about how perilous it was and how much practice was involved, you'll see how important it is to look at the concept of practice and rehearsal and how it impacts your live performance.
Right. You know, we've all heard the cliche, you know, practice makes perfect. And
right.
I was also reminded of the, you know, the joke, how do you get to Carnegie Hall? Practice, practice, practice. Well, I read an article on Time's website, actually. Didn't pick up the magazine. I'm like everyone else today. But
what are you doing?
but online, I read an article about practice and how practice makes perfect, or that cliche, is actually a myth. And it should be, we should rephrase that or change that cliche to say, you know, deliberate practice, or how do you get to Carnegie Hall? It's right. Deliberate practice, and there is a huge difference between just practice and deliberate practice. And you know, I think that's what businesses need to, you know, all of us, athletes, musicians, and those of us in business today need to remember that it's deliberate practice. It's the concept of addressing, you know, those weaknesses and correcting them and continually seeking out those weaknesses In that article that I read, they were talking about a study that was done at the University of Texas, Austin, by Professor Robert Duke, and he they took a group of pianists and gave them a most extremely advanced piece of music.
Very complicated.
Very complicated. Yep. One that they were not interested or familiar with, rather, and they'd never seen. So they were all given the same piece of music and watched them, you know, and how they handled their errors and watched them practice over, you know, the course of a week, I think it was. And the best pianists, they determined, addressed their mistakes immediately. Yeah, it wasn't those who, you know, when we think, when I first thought about that cliche, practice makes perfect, in my mind I was just thinking, practice, 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 repetition, repetition, repetition. For businesses, for musicians, for athletes, that's how you get to there. You know, that's how you get to the goal, but it's not. If we're just doing the same thing over and over, we're repeating those same mistakes, and that's what they found with this study. Those best pianists addressed those mistakes immediately, made notes on their sheet music, and played that same section over and over and over, where the others would just go back to the beginning and start over. And I was like, man, that's brilliant. You know, and we really need to take that philosophy and, you know, because you and I
apply
love
it to our business. We have to apply it.
Apply it to our business.
We absolutely. Well, listen, I'm familiar with that study. I Google music and business and industry all the time. And it is absolutely true. When you break it down and say, how do we tolerate a certain percentage of our employees not taking the training we provide seriously? You end up with a certain percentage of people that don't love your brand because there's a certain percentage of your employees and performers that aren't giving their all. They're not being the people they were in the interview. I love this stuff. We're going to talk about practice today. Deb has been in a band. She's been a musician. I've been around music my entire life. And I would say probably for Deb and myself, I've spent more time practicing than performing for a live audience. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's what we're going to talk about. We talk all the time about budgets and investments and allocations. Are you really allocating money to your training program to make your live performance better? Or are you just filling an agenda, a void about, hey, let's send people to new employee orientation, let's do sales and service training for 4 hours? Deb and I are talking about looking at your employees as performers. You've got an audience. They interact with you in person, in the drive-up, in the online social media space of the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to talk about how you intentionally engage them and leave them wanting more, as we always do, right after this. From the summer of 1982, Deb, can that be 30 years ago?
No way.
No way. All right. Let's talk about practice. I would say probably it's got to be 1978. My brother got a guitar for Christmas, and my dad took him down to the music store to do lessons. And the first thing the instructor told him is, you have to do something every day. What do you suppose that was?
Practice.
Yeah. I've been a professional trainer since 1987. When I was in the Army, one of my jobs was to instruct people on the proper use of azimuth, how to navigate, how to add and subtract a magnetic azimuth when you're out in the field using a compass for navigation. And every now and then you'd find somebody, even in the Army, that wasn't interested in anything I had to say. They're like, hey, you know, we'll follow the guy in front of us. Don't worry about it. And when you transfer that to today, you've probably done training where people aren't taking it serious, you know, taking it seriously. And what I believe is the best training is the training that models the actual performance that you put on every day.
Absolutely. Heck, I've been in training sessions where people were napping.
They stand up in the back of the room. It's like, oh, we're gonna be polite. We're not gonna put on the evaluation that you were putting us through. We're gonna say, well, when I was in the Army, training was everything. This was 1986 to 1995. There's only one war in there, the Gulf War. Everything else was training. And they used to always use this term, practice like you play. I think a lot of people in the banking marketplace, they go to training, they get a free lunch, they see their friends or whatever. But what do trainers and organizations have to do to make people want to go to training?
Well, I can immediately think of a training session that I've been in that held my attention the entire time, and there was a lot of role playing,
right, right,
where we actually felt as though we were in, you know, those situations. I'm obviously a marketer. I'm not on the front line here at our branch. So in this marketing training session, we had to reenact a disastrous situation at a branch. So for some reason, the branch was immediately shut down, and we as marketers had to address the media and local news stations who were thrown, you know, it was trial by fire.
That's happening right now in Florida. Penn Air Federal Credit Union, a huge credit union in Florida, is shut down for, what, 2 or 3 days?
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, exactly. What I love about training is that it prepares you for the unknown.
Mm-hmm.
If everybody knows what to do and what to say and where to go, that is a tremendous advantage to organizations that get hit with something and don't know how to act. I was looking at the Twitter feed, and I think it was yesterday, I saw that Penn Air had closed all their branches. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, that's a gigantic credit union.
Yeah.
Man, that's very, very interesting. Well, listen, you've been a musician. You've played in the band. When you saw the video, we put up a video today called Summer Band.
Mm-hmm.
A couple weeks ago, I went out to Canyon High School here in beautiful New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof, and videotaped the high school band preparing for their halftime show. And I was just blown away by the amount of details involved in this halftime show. And they're practicing hours and hours a day outside the school year and then during the school year for a halftime show that goes on for about 8 minutes. When you saw that video, what kind of struck you as the relatable concept for any brand or business out there?
Well, first it was the fact that within the band there are lots of moving parts and different sections to the band. And we have that in every business. We have different departments who are coexisting and working together for a common goal. And the band, you know, they were the same. They were under the direction of, you know, their band director, you know, being instructed to, you know, move into a certain formation or, you know, play the, you know, the same notes on, you know, the music that they'd been given. But it was very well orchestrated, and kudos to that band director because the band looked great. But
it was crazy. I mean, I had gone out there basically to look at the generational dynamic. All these young people in that millennial, sub Gen Y, Gen Z category, kids that didn't listen to AM radio, kids that didn't know about, you know, and when I got out there and I saw how focused everybody was, if you look at the video, in the early part of the rehearsal or the training, they're not even using their instruments. It's all about how to get to the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And it's like, isn't that a great metaphor for what our businesses do each and every day? How do you get everybody to care about what people see and hear. Because, Deb, you go out there in the marketplace every day. You're out there with your kids. You're out there with your husband. You're out there with your family. And you run into people that are not – they did not interview that way. They didn't audition that way. Mm-hmm. They weren't rude in the interview. They weren't disinterested in the interview. And you ask yourself, how do we keep ourselves from hiring those kinds of people? And I believe what you do is you hire people and you train them and make them understand that when the unexpected things occur, you're still courteous, you still know your products, you're still dressed the right way. And that's what I learned at that doing that video with the Canyon High School Band.
Yeah. And, you know, it's through training and practicing that your employees will be able to handle those situations. And when you equip them with, you know, be it the right verbiage to use in any given situation or, you know, the way to, you know, the correct way to respond, you're empowering your employees, you're empowering your staff, and that's what's going to generate, you know, confidence. Yeah. And, you know, that's what's going to take, you know, your mediocre employees and thrust them into a leader, you know.
Well, it does.
Someone
and
who
it
feels as though they're equipped to be a leader and to be an example for those around them. And
When I saw the video, when I was shooting the video, mm-hmm. I looked at the brass section, the drum section. I thought, oh, the drums are the IT department. They're keeping the beat. They're doing, you know, it's not the most romantic department, but they're keeping the beat. Then we had the horns and the melody makers, the woodwinds and stuff like that. And it just it reminded me that even at a business like yours, you've got marketing, you've got delivery, you've got technology, you've got computers and all these things that we associate with a modern brand.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, how do you put out a live performance that people are so interested in that they come and pay money to see? And I thought that the practice discipline of the band, it's probably the same at any marching band anywhere in America. But I just thought it was a great metaphor for if you're not getting the results you like in the lobby, maybe you need to reimagine what you're doing in the training room.
Right, exactly. It's not just practice. It's deliberate practice.
Deliberate practice.
Pointing out those weaknesses and continually looking, you know, correcting those weaknesses, moving forward, and continually looking out for other weaknesses that occur or are existing that you haven't addressed yet and address them.
Exactly, and address them honestly. Listen, when we come back from the break, Deb's going to have a last word on the value, the importance of realistic training, and we'll do it right after this.
You're listening to The Power of Performance. If your brand were a band, would you leave your audience wanting more?
All right, with 90 seconds left on the show, Deb, what do businesses and brands and banks and credit unions and everybody else have to do in training to make sure that their employees, their performers, hit it the right way at the live performance?
Well, in my opinion, it's what I shared with you earlier. I think nothing is more powerful than role-playing. Give them a scenario, give them a situation, and enact it, you know, right there on the spot and see how they handle, you know, the situation. That's going to be a good indicator of who your top performers will be.
Well, and who doesn't panic? And who doesn't get all freaked out?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Whether you call it role-playing or skill practice, mm-hmm. I will tell you as a trainer, as a professional trainer since 1980s, a lot of people will complain about role playing the most.
Right.
They don't want to participate. They don't want to do mm-hmm. it. But I, like you, believe creating plausible moments that occur each and every day in your brand is the best way to train. Deb, listen, I love talking about training. I'm a trainer at heart. you're a marketer, and you know how important it is to train people to market the way you want your brand to be heard and seen.
Absolutely.
Well, listen, next week we're going to talk about the best of the decade. Think about the 2000s. Here it is, back to school week in 2012. Deb, does it seem possible?
No, it does not.
we're in the back to school mode.
I don't even know where the last half hour went.
Well,
you were wrapping up, and I was like, really?
For most people, at least they can listen to the radio show and know that was the worst 30 minutes of my day. So, I mean,
no, certainly not.
No. I love exploring things that we all do. We all work for somebody. We all go to training. We evaluate that training. And listen,
we're all practicing.
And we're all practicing. And I think, and you know this as a musician, the kids that practice, the people that practice their skill, their musical instrument, their singing, they always seem to do better than those that don't.
Sure. Absolutely.
And in a day of tightening budgets, I really do think any brand should reevaluate what kind of time and, you know, monetary investments they're making in making sure their people, whether they're there. The thing that struck me at the band was they lose their best people every year at graduation.
Yeah. Yes. My daughter's choirs, she was involved in, I think, 5 choirs in high school, and the choir director express that same sentiment. She's losing some of her best. And
all the time.
Yeah, right.
All the time. Well, the great brands don't get freaked out by the occasional change in leadership, the occasional loss of a veteran, but the great brands do what people like Deb and I do. We constantly think about how to make our show, our brand, better. Deb, you know what? I love doing a duet with you. We miss Troy for sure.
Yeah.
But this is a great way to talk about real things happening in the real marketplace.
Sure. Absolutely.
Right. Well, listen, if it's Tuesday, it's generally not the Power Performance. We're generally performing on Wednesday, but we appreciate you joining us for a special Tuesday edition. Hey, Deb in beautiful Mansfield, Ohio, say goodbye to all of our friends and listeners.
Goodbye, everybody. Follow me on Twitter at Deb Schaefer.
At Deb Schaefer.
Yep.
I do it, and you should too. And I'm at Eloquent Online, doing what we can to be eloquent online and sharing with people the modern stories about our contemporary workplace and our marketplace and how to make it better. Hey, Deb, have a great weekend, and we'll see you next Wednesday.
You too. Bye, everybody.
Take care.